Yes.
Welcome to Today on Broadway for Friday, September 2nd, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, it's been a week. It has been a week. Not just any week, it has been a week. So I am very happy that we are heading into a long weekend, and we aren't going to have a normal episode on Monday unless something like super huge breaks over the weekend, but I think you're going to have a special interview on Monday, right?
Yeah, I spoke to Betty Buckley for a little while what she is up to, and she's coming to New York to do a new show and lots of fun things like that. So we chatted on the phone from Texas.
From Texas,
and we had a good time. So like you said, if nothing big happens, we'll play Betty on Monday. If not, if something big does happen, then we will give you a little report on it, then play Betty.
Awesome. Now, when you say she's coming to New York to do a new show, that's like a cabaret show, and she's not in a new production. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
just want to make that clear.
She's coming to New York to do her show that her sort of cabaret show that she does once a year, and it's new every year. And this year, she's singing songs from Radiohead, songs from Joe Iconis, songs from Jason Robert Brown, songs from really cool things like that. So
that's all over the place. Yeah,
yeah, it is. The topic is story songs.
Oh, I like it.
And those are three composers who do write stories in their songs, you know. So I'm excited about that.
Awesome. Did she mention at all stopping in to see Cats while she's in town?
You know, we interviewed Betty, I want to say 2 years ago or so, and we talked a little bit about Cats. So I think that we really covered all the Cats stuff. Okay. She told a very, very funny story about riding the tire and nearly dying with Ken Page, that they the little cherry picker that comes down and picks you up off the tire at the top of the Winter Garden, the door wasn't open and it crashed through the roof and things, and it was like, and she thought she was gonna die, and and then she said she had to act really, really hard. So she ended up coming back down on the tire, which doesn't really fit in with the story. I mean, there's one audience that's like, oh no, Grisabella was reincarnated. She came back down on the tire. But that's
Is she supposed to be Jesus? I don't understand.
Exactly.
Jesus cat.
You know, that Andrew Lloyd Webber can't stay away from those religious undertones. Whistle down the wind. Uh-huh. All right, so let's get on to our first story of the day, which is development underway to bring Moulin Rouge to Broadway.
Yeah, James, I'm going to take you back to the summer after my sophomore year of college and a strange, fascinating, oddly titillating movie called Moulin Rouge hit movie theaters across the country and really became a cultural phenomenon that persists to this day, and in many ways popularized the idea of jukebox musicals. Directed by Oscar and Tony nominee Baz Luhrmann, the movie starred Nicole Kidman, Ewan McGregor, Richard Roxburgh, Jim Broadbent, John Leguizamo, Kylie Minogue, and Caroline O'Connor. This story is a strange fever dream set in Paris in the year 1900 and involves a poet and a courtesan who fall in love, and features songs by David Bowie, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Fatboy Slim, DeBarge, Madonna, Nirvana, Julie Stein, Elton John, Queen, The Police, and more. Kind of like these story songs Betty Buckley was talking about.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, or it sounds like the lineup from a previous version of SpongeBob the Musical. Well, after 15 years, apparently the Academy Award-winning film is now finally being adapted for the stage. Development work is currently underway with a book by Tony winner and Oscar and Emmy nominee John Logan, with direction from that guy who can't handle large productions, Alex Timbers. No other details like timeline or casting or creative team were announced, but this did come from an official press release, not someone, you know, hearing something in a studio, so they are clearly comfortable letting the cat out of the bag on this one. James, I love Moulin Rouge. It gave me one of my standard college karaoke go-to songs, so I'm extremely excited about this. But I think my favorite part about it is that Alex Timbers is directing. Since unceremoniously being let go from the Broadway-bound production of Frozen, his name has been officially attached to two movie adaptations, this and Beetlejuice, that are a little weird. Stop, what are you doing? You can't do that, James. And they're weird, they're a bit off the wall, and they're really kind of unusual, which I think is a perfect fit for Alex. But they do each have their own size and scope demands, which is what Timbers was reportedly let go by Disney for not being able to handle. So I think this is just like, not that anything in theater is ever done for spite, but I think this announcement, along with the Beetlejuice word coming out in Riedel's column, is really kind of fun. And so I say good for Alex. I think he will do a fantabulous job with this show.
I'm very excited about this. I am a fan of the movie from Moulin Rouge, and I would really like to see how they're going to do this on stage, because it was so visual.
Oh, yes.
You know, I guess you can do it. That's why I do not direct, because I can't figure these things out.
Well, you know, Baz Luhrmann has a very specific style that runs through a lot of his movies, not only this, but the Romeo and Juliet. But then also, he is a Tony-nominated director for his production of La Boheme, which I did not see. But I from what I understand, had a similar motif to a lot of what he calls his red curtain movies, which were Moulin Rouge, Romeo and Juliet, and Strictly Ballroom. Is that what it was called? Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever it was. Yeah. So, you know, I think it had a very similar motif. And so I don't know how they're going to get a giant elephant room on stage. But I'm sure if someone can figure out, Alex Timbers is one of them. So I'm totally excited about this. The Twitter sphere was gaga with casting ideas. So I am sure until they announce a cast, or until a cast is, you know, surreptitiously discovered by Michael Riedel, people will be hoping their own personal favorites are in it. But what I thought was super interesting about this is that not only were fans really pushing their favorites, Broadway stars were saying, okay, I want to do this. Like, Laura Osnes started talking to all of her former co-stars, Colin Donnell, Corey Cott, saying, okay, which one of you guys wants to do this with me? So I think it's cool that this is something that not only do fans love, like me, but a certain generation of Broadway performers love this as well. And I think that shows you how important this was before the recent trend of movie musicals happened. This came before Chicago won Best Picture. This came before Hairspray and all of the live stuff on TV as well, and Sweeney Todd on screen and Les Mis on screen. So I think this is a really important role in the reestablishment of the movie musical that I don't think people have given it a lot of credit for. And hopefully when it comes to Broadway, finally, we'll kind of be able to analyze that impact that it's had that we haven't really talked about much.
I have one suggestion.
Okay.
And I'm going to say it in code. Maybe somebody will get it. Ready?
Okay.
Hopefully they'll cast Maddie Perrin.
I don't know. I got nothing.
Maddie Perrin.
Oh, okay. I got it now. Well, I did mention Colin Donnell as one of the people who people are throwing around for the Ewan McGregor part. And she does have a very good relationship with Alex Timbers. So you never know.
Hmm.
You never know.
Oh, you know, you were just mentioning about the whole this is an official thing and not just a rumor and things like that.
Yeah.
I heard a good rumor, and I was meant to say it yesterday, but I didn't say anything. So have you heard anything about Small Mouth Sounds looking for a Broadway house?
I have not, but that's I think that would be fascinating. And it's another, like we've been talking about with Indecent, it would be another female-written play coming to Broadway, even though none have been officially announced yet. So I'm all for it. I've the buzz for that thing has been, I guess for a show with no talking, the buzz has been huge.
Yeah, I meant to mention it yesterday that I heard this rumor that they were looking for a house. So Small Mouth Sounds, yay!
No, shh.
All right. Shh. Okay, be very, very quiet. What's up in the show and casting news?
Well, yesterday, the Signature Theater in Arlington, Virginia, completed the cast announcements for their upcoming world premiere of the another Disney musical, Freaky Friday. The musical from Bridget Carpenter, Tom Kitt, and Brian Yorkey will star the previously announced Heidi Blickenstaff and Emma Hunton as a mother and daughter who somehow switch bodies and have to get back to their rightful ones. They will be joined by Broadway alums Jason Gotte and Alan H. Green. Coincidentally, Gotay's name was conspicuously absent from yesterday's announcement of the Broadway production of A Bronx Tale. He played the show's lead Caligero. Sorry, Chaz, I suck. In the Paper Mill production earlier this year, a role that will now be assumed on Broadway by Bobby Conte Thornton. The show will be directed by Christopher Ashley and choreographed by Sergio Trujillo, and will begin performances 5 minutes outside of Washington, D.C. on October 4th. James, we make a concerted effort not to discuss casting and personal gossip. Show gossip is a whole other thing. But the timing of this, somewhat similar to what we talked about with Alex Timbers, is really interesting in light of Jason Gotay's involvement in the two projects that I mentioned, and I'm now dying to know what his decision-making process was in picking which project to pursue, if in fact he was given that option at all. We never know what happens in these casting decisions. Now, I don't want to speculate on that, James, but I've said this from the beginning, especially once they announced that Heidi Blickenstaff was involved, but I think this show has legs. And if it wasn't for another Disney musical waiting in the wings called Frozen, I would expect this to come to Broadway next season. Even if the reviews for this are stupendous in DC and in the already announced La Jolla run next spring, there's no way that Thomas Schumacher will bring it to Broadway in the same season as Frozen, is there?
I can't imagine that they would compete against themselves, no.
Yeah. I mean, look, we know how much is being invested in Frozen. We've talked about it not only from the development, the big name cast that's already involved, but then also the expansion of the St. James. But it just seems weird that they're going to have these two out of town tryouts for this. Maybe, you know, they're going to go the route of just letting it do some regional stuff. And then if it goes well, bring it into New York afterwards. But, you know, this is something that, again, a certain generation of people, actually multiple generations of people, love this movie because it's had multiple very popular movie versions, because it was originally based on a novel by Mary Rodgers, another musical theater, you know, lifer as well. So I'm optimistic for it. I absolutely adore with all my heart Heidi Blickenstaff. So I hope that she stays with it and it does make it to Broadway. Maybe if the directorial change at Frozen puts things on a slightly different timetable, maybe they'll sneak this in. But I think you're right. I think if this is going to come to Broadway at some point, it's going to have to wait until after Frozen if that doesn't change its timetable.
I think I might change my opinion from a minute ago, because I think about, you know, Lion King is here and Aladdin's here, and we've had, you know, the Tarzans and the Little Mermaids and all competing against each other. Maybe they would bring two in at the same time.
But they wouldn't. But they never opened in the same season and competing for awards and, you know, all of the awards that even Aladdin, which is obviously still kicking butt. It didn't win a whole bunch of awards, but it was nominated. It was, you know, it's still being led by a Tony winner and James Monroe Iglehart. I can't imagine them wanting to put, say, Betsy Wolf up against Heidi Blickenstaff and competing for those awards. And that's why I said I would have thought that, honestly, Freaky Friday could have come, they, you know, with Disney, as we talked about with Harvey Weinstein yesterday. Disney would have the money to find a theater if it really wanted to in the spring, but it's already committed to an out-of-town production in California. Now, those can be broken if things do really, really well at Signature, but I don't see that happening. So, who knows?
So, okay, maybe there's every season 5, 6, maybe 7 new musicals that are eligible for awards. So, if you had a chance of being 1 of 5 or 1 of 6... then you had the chance of being 2 of 5 or 2 of 6. You know, maybe that's more important to, you know, Disney leads in these awards. You know, do Hollywood studios put films up against each other?
Yeah, but there's thousands of movies released every year, not 5 or 6, like you said.
No, but I mean big movies. You know,
well,
ten
no,
ten
and
points.
Here's No, but here's the thing, is they don't release them in the same weekend anymore. There's always going to be these huge franchises every year because there's just too many of them not to do on a yearly basis. But it used to be that we would have multiple blockbusters released in the same weekend, especially during the summer. But that doesn't happen anymore in movies. And I think the thing with Disney is, yes, they want all the awards. Obviously, any producer does. But Disney also is in a much different situation than a lot of other producers or even, you know, production companies. They play the long game. Lion King has been here for 18 years. Aladdin seems like it's going to be running for a while. They are looking to play these shows like Frozen for decades. I don't think they're going to say, hey, let's try to maximize our odds and win some Tonys, because I think they want to win as many as possible. And I don't see them putting them together, which is I hope that doesn't mean that Freaky Friday never gets an opportunity, but I think it's going to be a really good show. I mean, it's you know, it's a kitten Yorkie musical with Heidi Blickenstaff. Come on, that's going to be awesome.
All right, well, we better move forward into George Salazar competes. Oh, excuse me, George Salazar completes Keen Company's Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yeah, another upcoming musical completed its casting yesterday as the Keen Company announced that Here Lies Love star George Salazar would join Nick Blamire and Sierra Renee in their production of Tick, Tick, Boom. Salazar and Blamire previously co-starred in the 2011 Broadway revival of Godspell. This production, directed by Jonathan Silverstein, will play off-Broadway, also beginning on October 4th, just like Freaky Friday. And moving to kind of clean up this little show and casting section, James, a few times over the past month or two, we've discussed MCC's upcoming one-night-only reading of Neil LaBute's new play, Reasons to be Pretty Happy, and the fact that the universally adored Paul Rudd will be starring in the reading. Well, yesterday we learned that he will not be the only star on the stage at the Lucille Lortel Theater, as he will be joined by Emmy nominee, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants member, and General Hospital's original Emily Quatermain, Amber Tamlin, yes, also Russ's daughter, as well as two-time Tony winner Norbert Leo Butts and stage and screen stalwart Jennifer Mudge. The reading will take place next week, Sunday, September 11th. Apparently, there are still tickets available, ranging from $100 to $350, so we will have a link in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com so you can try to get some of those few remaining tickets.
All right, Freestyle Love Supreme to play the Gramercy Theater this month.
Yeah, yesterday it was announced that hip-hop improv troupe Freestyle Love Supreme would be returning to New York for two shows on September 30th at the Gramercy Theater. The lineup for those shows will feature Utkarsh Ambedkar, who appeared in the first Pitch Perfect movie, plays Mindy Kaling's brother on her show, and just booked a Showtime pilot of his own, as well as Arthur the Genius Lewis, King Bill Sherman, Chris Shockwave Sullivan, Two Touch Anthony Veneziale, and some other guy named Lin-Manuel Miranda. You can see Freestyle Love Supreme's TV show on the NBC... You can see Freestyle Love Supreme's TV show on the NBC comedy streaming service CISO, and we will have a link to get tickets in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com. And speaking of Lin-Manuel Miranda show schedules, yesterday we learned the dates for the first two tour stops, if you can call them that, for the Hamilton First National Tour. We already knew that it would kick off an extended stay in San Francisco next March before moving to LA for a similar run in the fall, but now we know that the San Fran stop will begin on March 14th and run through August 5th of 2017 at the SHN Orpheum Theater, before playing the Hollywood Pantages Theater from August 11th through December 30th. The separate Chicago sit-down production will kick off later this month on September 27th. James, I know long runs are common for tours in California and even in Washington, D.C. often, but these are practically sit-down productions of their own, which is no surprise at all for Hamilton, which could probably set up probably a half dozen or more sit-down productions around the country or the world and be just fine in terms of attracting audiences.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure that, you know, Phantom had San Fran and L.A. companies that were there for years.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that these runs are so short in Los Angeles and San Francisco.
I wonder if they might eventually spin off the tour and leave it in one spot when a second national tour kicks up with, you know, Wicked has multiple tours, Book of Mormon, I think, is down to one, but at one point it had two tours. I wonder if they will kind of spin off some of these touring companies to Sit Down Productions at some point. But you're right. Phantom, I know, had the L.A. cast. Robert Guillaume famously played the Phantom, was the first African-American Phantom, and was the only one for a long time until Norm Lewis. So you're right. And then, they, of course, they had the Vegas production as well much later. So I just, you know, we talked about it before. They talk about potentially having 8 productions of Hamilton running at the same time internationally within a year or two. I would be shocked if it was just, you know, 2 or 3 in the States. It would have to be more than that.
We will have to see, but I think that's, even with the 6-month runs there, they're going to be still hard to get tickets.
Yep.
All right. The New York Times ends its regional theater coverage of the arts.
Yeah, James, this is a story that is becoming all too familiar lately for regional newspapers around the country. But for theater fans, this one is especially far-reaching, even if you don't live in the tri-state area. But it's been reported this week that the New York Times has quietly ended its coverage of theaters, art galleries, restaurants, and other companies and businesses in the metro area, and have in turn let go dozens of longtime contributors. The Times claims that this move is tied to their new focus on expanding their news coverage nationally and internationally. They've expanded their Los Angeles bureau, but it will undoubtedly have monstrous impacts on for and nonprofit companies, especially in the arts, that have benefited from coverage and reviews in The Old Gray Lady. James, you see a lot of productions off Broadway and, I guess, outside of Manhattan that also get a lot of coverage from the Times, whether it's at, you know, Paper Mill or somewhere else in New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. This is going to hurt for a lot of theater companies and especially for a lot of theater fans.
I disagree.
Really?
I think that coverage of regional theater productions in the Times is nothing more than a vanity exercise. I don't think it affects ticket sales for these regional productions. I think it's just people want to see their production in the New York Times. And I think there is literally no financial gain for the New York Times to keep this up. And that if there truly is a market for these things, something else will emerge. I mean, you know, the regional websites within Broadway World have thrived because of this type of a market. And I think that that will continue to happen. And other people will get in. Certainly, I mean, Washington, D.C. has, what do they have, 4 or 5 different regional websites? D.C. Yeah. Theater Scene and Maryland Theater Scene, MD Theater, whatever it's called. And, you know, and various things like that. Boston's got them. Chicago's got them. San Francisco, Los Angeles have got, you know, media outlets that just focus on the things there. If the New York Times can't, you know, make sense of their business model right now, I understand that, and they have to cut that. And it's sad because it, you know, but they said exactly this when Variety scaled back the theatrical coverage, as, you know, Variety's theatrical coverage has been cut and cut and cut and cut for the last 15 years. And they keep on bemoaning the end of Variety coverage with theater. But I don't see this as impacting any of these theater companies right now.
I will point you to a Deadline article that I'll put in the show notes where they did talk to theaters that have been featured in the Times, and maybe they're not the Paper Mills, the biggest ones, but they said they've seen 50% increases in ticket sales after being positively reviewed in the New York Times. I do agree that from a financial standpoint, it probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense for the Times to keep covering this. So I understand that, although I do, as someone who has a degree in journalism and communications, I do think that there is a commitment to news and coverage that goes beyond the bottom line, but I understand that's not how the world works. But I also do think that this is about more than just theater and more than just about arts. There are a lot of companies and businesses and restaurants especially that have benefited greatly from that. So I disagree that it won't have an impact. I do agree on understanding where it comes from, but, you know, I work for Broadway World. I started and I still write for our regional sites. And I know people love getting a great review from me. They frame it. They put it on their wall. They have me sign it because I'm that important. but I'm not Ben Brantley. That was sarcasm, by the way. I'm not Ben Brantley. I'm not Charles Isherwood. There is something different. It might be vanity, but it just means more. It's the times.
You know,
we can agree to disagree. I think we agree that but financially, I understand.
Brantley and Isherwood don't go and review, you know, theater in Westchester or Hartford or something like that. You know,
no, but they do go. They do go to Millburn.
Yeah, but it's not going to affect the Pilgrimville Playhouse, I don't think, or Goodspeed Opera House, or
you're right.
Some of those things here, and I have to tell you, you look at cratering numbers of print sales in the New York Times. It's all online, and so I really don't think it's going to be this end all that everybody thinks it is, but. What we do want to make sure is that you get out to see Time Out New York's top 20 shows of the fall, though.
Yeah, this is kind of a nice palate cleanser after their 20 worst shows of the millennium list that we talked about last week. I'm not going to go through them all, but we will have a link, obviously. But there are some really great ones on this list, and they're not just the Broadway shows. Yes, they have the Cherry Orchard and Front Page and Dear Evan Hansen, but they've also got some cool off-Broadway stuff. Nat Turner in Jerusalem, Love, Love, Love from Roundabout, Sell By Date from MTC, A Life starring David Hyde Pierce. They have just a lot of really cool shows that I think some of them are the ones you would expect, and some are a little bit off the beaten path. The Death of the Last Black Man in the Whole Entire World from the Signature Theater by Suzanne Laurie Parks looks fascinating. You know, it's going to be a great season. I you know, a lot of people have talked about there aren't any huge juggernauts probably announced yet for the fall. There's no Hamilton to kind of dominate the scene anymore. So I think that opens up a lot more theater going hours and dollars that hopefully people get to see a lot of these. James, is there anything on this list that really jumps out to you?
The David Hyde Pierce one I had totally forgotten about because I've been thinking about Hello Dolly along those lines. So I'm really excited about every single one of these. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, how am I going to find enough time to get in all these shows? It's awesome.
And I didn't mention, you know, Dead Poets Society at Classic Stage as well. That one's going to be, I think that one will be one that will be looking for a transfer as well. That's just going out on a limb for me. It's maybe not a very thick or thin limb, but I think that one will have a life after CSC.
All right. So why don't you get us out of here?
Man, for wanting to get this week over with, we sure babbled a lot today. All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. You can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt. And subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Jen and I are recording a few episodes this weekend, so make sure you've got our feeds so you can hear them as soon as they come out.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thank you so much for spending some of your time this week with us. And Monday, we will have a special Betty Buckley show. Sunday is This Week on Broadway with Peter Felicia and Matt Tamanini. And we will be back on Tuesday to light up your ears.